Captain Radio. Now, research proves that public speaking is the most terrifying thing that you can be faced with. It could be to an audience of 5 or 500, but most would avoid it at all costs. So my next guest, Lisa Evans, is very aware from Speaking Savvy. Hello, Lisa. Good to see you again.
Hi, Jenny. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Public speaking is right up the top of the list of the most fearful things to do, isn't it?
It is.
Why is it exactly? Because we have conversations, right, with people. And I suppose you could accept the fact that you might be getting judged by the person you're talking to. But as soon as you have to get up in front of a crowd looking at you, different.
It can be incredibly scary. For many, it's being in the limelight and being at the front of the room with all eyes on you. It's pretty intense.
It is pretty intense when you think about it. I mean, like you said, it can go from an audience of 5 to 500. The greater the audience, the bigger the fear, do you think?
Often, yes, definitely.
Yeah. So we're faced with, you know, the everyday person who might belong to a committee or a PNC group or something like that. They may have to say something, get up and speak one day. They'll do anything to try and avoid it, won't they?
They will, usually. But the best thing to do is planning. You know, procrastination and fear are really good friends. Yeah. So nothing's worse than putting it off. If you know that you've got to do some sort of a presentation or a speech, then plan ahead. The more you can plan, the easier it is, the less stressful that you'll feel, and the more prepared you go into it, then the better you'll do.
I've got a theory about communication in public speaking and connecting with people in front of you in an audience, in that if you know your subject, you don't have to try too hard, is probably what I'm trying to get at. You don't have everything handwritten. Would you agree with that?
Definitely. Yeah, knowing your topic and sticking to the topics that you are not only interested in, you know, passionate about, knowledgeable about, but also important to make sure that it's what the audience wants to hear as well. Yeah. And you're right, you never memorise a script or worry too much about your words, keep it conversational. Practice, by all means, but if you start getting caught up on which word comes next and what am I going to say, then it's really easy for the whole lot to become very quickly, you know, derailed. A few trigger points on a card and just a bit of a rough idea of what you want to say, but treating it like a conversation.
Yes, like somebody's asked you, tell me about what you're doing. Exactly. And that's the way you probably, I would like to hear them communicate that way. Dot points, I think, are important, just in case you have a bit of a mind blank and you've forgotten to cover a really, you know, special part of it.
Yeah, dot points are good or often trigger words. But there's no need for your audience. They don't need to see your dot points or your words. So often a trigger word on a cue card works well. I tend to think of my speech as a storyboard, so I think very much in visual pictures. So my talk in my mind is like a little movie trailer. So I can actually sort of see the character going through the movie and I know what comes next.
So you plan to have a beginning, a middle and an end.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Come to a sort of a conclusion. Okay, so we've got a first time person who has been asked to get up and talk about their subject, or it could be a parent going into a classroom and talking about their career, which is quite often happens. Yeah. So how should they start off? Good morning, class, or good morning, everybody. As simple as that.
An introduction is good. Often somebody else is introducing you, so there's no need to do that again. So I suggest you just jump straight into the topic. Just something that's sort of interesting, sound energetic and enthusiastic and really interested in your topic, which is often hard when you're a bit nervous. You tend to have a bit more of a frozen look on your face and your voice can sound a bit monotonous. So remembering to smile however you feel on the inside is really good. You can choose to act confident even though you may not feel confident. So standing up with nice tall posture, which means that you're breathing properly and it means that you're able to project your voice and you look confident. Yeah. If you look confident, you'll come across as credible. Yeah. People will be more inclined to listen to what you have to say. So just start off, you know, naturally. Introduce your topic, maybe three main points, and then wrap it up with a simple conclusion.
Yeah.
Less is often best.
I was about to ask you the timing.
So whatever time, it's important to know. So ask your host up front, how much time do I have? Yeah. And then whatever time you're given, whether it's 5 minutes or an hour, whatever it is, then make sure you stick to that time.
Yeah, very, very important. The other thing too is I find that if people are a little bit nervous, they tend to speak a little bit too quickly.
They do.
And in doing that, you can fall over your words or you and ah, because your brain's not keeping up with your mouth. So if you slow it down just a little, not too painfully, just slow it down a little, it manages to get rid of all the ums and ahs and everything.
It does. It does. It makes it easier for your audience to understand. And often, you know, nervousness, it means that we want to rush because we just want to get it over so that we can sit back down. And you're right, the words end up crashing into what it becomes a bit of a train wreck as we stop articulating the beginning and the ends of words. Mm. And it can become difficult for the audience to follow along. Mm. And if they're not following along, then they switch off. And
I reckon performing or practicing in front of your family, that'd be the best critics ever. Oh, Dad!
Especially kids.
But if you win them over, you're going to win everyone over. The temptation for some people to tell a joke as part of what they're talking about has got to be very natural and extremely funny. I'd be trying that joke on everybody and relating to the story, to the content.
Yeah, jokes work well, but observational humour, I think, is even better. So pick something that's interesting or quirky or funny that's relevant to your to your topic and kind of weave it in. If you're going to actually tell a joke, or just make sure that you're picking the right audience for the right joke. Obviously, we've got to be careful. So self-deprecating humour works really, really well, or something you've observed. Depends. If you know the audience really well and they can be up for a good in-house joke, then that can work.
I'd be very careful about that. Yeah, the other thing too is body language. It's really important not to over-dramatise everything with your hands and walk up and down the staging and that sort of thing.
Yeah, and often we can do that. We've got all this nervous energy inside and it's got to be channelled out somewhere, and often it can manifest in really sort of fidgety and jerky movements or the over-dramatised. So again, you know, think every day, think conversational, how you would normally use your hands. Often people overthink it, and often, as people will say to me as a speaker coach, you know, what do I do with my hands? And my answer is, well, if you're walking down the street or you've arrived at work in the morning, do you ever think to yourself, I wonder what I'm going to do with my hands? You don't. It just sort of happens. So whatever naturally happens with your hands, but avoid closed postures. You want to look as though you are, you know, welcoming.
Being honest and open.
And a good signal of trust. So no closed postures and no sort of jerky movements, but just try and keep it smooth and flowing, and don't overthink it.
No, you're right. Don't over rehearse. The thing is too, what you happen to wear on the day is important, because I remember as a kid at school in the classroom, I used to look at my teacher's outfit all the time and think, oh, we should change it, or walk up, the shoes are a bit crook. You've got to be able to present properly, don't you, for the subject.
Yeah, it's important to dress to impress, but also dress to be really comfortable. Because if you're not comfortable and you're on stage, people are going to, they're going to notice that. Mm. So, you know, shoes are really important. Make sure you've got shoes that I've been caught out by clip-clopping across the stage, not realising there was a wooden floor with heels. So I usually take two pairs of shoes. I've got my soft rubber shoes in case there's a noisy floor. Things like jewellery, you don't want jewellery clicking around. It's obviously the same in the studio. Things like bangles or things that are going to flash and distract. And so something that you feel good in, that looks good. Avoid all black. Often if you're speaking at a conference or an event, you might have black in the background. So maybe one solid bright colour looks good.
Interesting. Yeah, that's very, very true. No, first impressions are obvious, you know, when you walk out on stage, if you've been introduced. The good thing about the footsteps too, it's true, because there's silence once you've been introduced when you clip, 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 walk across. Oh my God. What about speeches by the relatives at someone's wedding?
The good or the bad?
Well, this is what I was probably getting at. The groomsman's given a bit of free rein. If I was the groom, I'd be checking the speech out before they got up there, because usually it's a bit of a, you know, put down, isn't it?
Yeah, it can be. Again, you know, a lot of them take a lot of time and make sure that they've got the right stories, and you've put a lot of effort into it, which is great. And I work with a lot of people doing really important speeches. I think probably the best tip that I have is, don't have a drink till after you've done your speech, because the combination of the nervousness and the alcohol and the adrenaline is not really a good combination. So just avoid, drink water up until the time of your speech, and then relax.
Have the speech early.
Have some fun. And again, just sort of make sure that your speech is relevant for everybody.
Yes. And you've got a lot of aunties, uncles, nanas and pops in the audience.
Yeah, and what one person finds funny, another person may not. And it's really common these days for the bride and groom to do a speech together.
Yes, I've noticed that. Be careful not to talk about the Bucks night.
Yes, good one. Or ex-partners.
Ex-partners, especially. Yeah, there could be. There's been a lot of faux pas over the years, hasn't there?
Yeah.
I mean, even Meghan Markle's father, who didn't attend the wedding.
Yes.
With her and Harry. Excuse my being layman terms there. You know, there's always something embarrassing that can happen at things like that, weddings particularly. And it's such a special day, isn't it, for the bride and the groom. Keep your comments, the witty comments, until after you go out somewhere else. No, I think that's fabulous. So is there a website or anything that anybody can get some tips from?
Yes, my website is www.speakingsavvy.com.au. Plenty of tips there around speaking and storytelling and presentation skills.
No, I think that's great. Yeah. Okay, thank you very much as always. Always good to speak to you, Lisa.
Thank you, Jenny.
Lisa Evans joining us.